Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
But that doesn't stop us from starting this show the way we always do, wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening. We're so glad you've chosen to tune in to DLC, your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free, thanks to our sponsor this week, Brooklinen. They're bringing the show to you. DLC, of course, the show all about games and their many forms, games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata, that's spelled with two N's and one T, and I am joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis. The guy who has one last week to showcase the incredible Spice Man.
Oh, hey, yo, what's up, babies? This is the Spice Man, the king of spice, the soul of spice, the deep, deep, deep love-bringing voice of spice, who can actually be here through Thanksgiving, Jeff. Let's not forget that the Spice Man
is here. Is the Spice Man juicing? Is that what's happening?
The Spice Man plays for the A's in the 80s and early 90s.
Oh, no. Spice Man's really changing a lot, but so many dingers. He's just knocking them out now.
The Spice Man wants to be your corporate spokesperson for your brand. I can sell anything. Baby!
It's like a ping pong between two extremes, and I can't handle it.
You either hate him or you hate him.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, this is it. We're in it. We're in the craziest time of the year. Big releases are slamming into us left and right. Huge stuff coming out. Huge stuff in the next couple of weeks. So glad to have you with us to talk about all of it, to talk about the news that doesn't seem to stop either. And the best part of all, we have an awesome guest to join us. You know that DLC always stands for your downloadable Cannata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, oh man, I'm excited because DLC stands for Dev Game Club's longtime co-host. Because from the Dev Game Club podcast, and also you may know him as the former creative director at 343 and on Halo 5 and many other awesome video games, Mr. Tim Longo is back with us. Hey, Tim.
Hello. Thank you for having me. Man, you guys just go. It's just like we're getting ready. It's about time. And then all of a sudden the music starts and then I get all giddy again. It's just a delight to be on this side. So I appreciate having me on again.
Oh, yeah,
Jeff and I loathe each other in real life. We don't like before. Don't share the secret that before it's just constant bickering and fighting. And then that song starts and Jeff and I are like, hey buddy. But off
let's
mic.
Just say that. The Spice Man isn't the only one juicing. You know what I mean? this is the best time of year. I'm so excited to talk about video games. There's so many to talk about and some interesting, juicy news to kick things off as well. So let's start the show the way we always do with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happen in the world of games this week. And you can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com or by visiting our subreddit. That's 5x5dlc.reddit.com. Really cool folks hanging out in that subreddit. So I encourage you to hang out as well. But Tim, you are our guest. So you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
So I saw a theme in your guys' stories, which I'm sure you will cover quite well, and I will comment on. So I threw an extra one in that I saw that's a little bit of a wacky one. And I swear I'm not a shill for Microsoft in this regard, but there's a story that popped up. The Taco Bell is actually doing a promotion with Xbox Game Pass Ultimate, where you buy some food there and you get entered to, I think, get entered in a raffle to win an Xbox One X. But then you also get 14 free days, I think, of Xbox Game Pass Ultimate, which is a key word to use there. The reason that I chose this sort of wacky one and not meant to be a commercial was actually for a more interesting reason, in my opinion. If you know, we all know, the three of us have been around for quite a while, and we all know that those sorts of deals primarily were done with individual games for the most part in the past. And they actually are still being done, you know, this year, right? You have your Mountain Dew, partnerships, your Doritos, your Taco Bells. But this one was interesting to me because this is actually Game Pass Ultimate.
Yeah.
You can go into Taco Bell and for $5 get 14 free days. And I think there's even a way to extend that beyond just the 14 days, and you get all of Game Pass. And so I just feel like the days have evolved in some way for this to happen, you know, from a business standpoint, where, you know, somebody going into Taco Bell getting 14 days of Game Pass, that's not a free, you know, beta to some multiplayer game, one individual game. That is a lot of options there, a lot of right. content. And I just thought it was an interesting kind of weird sign that I saw this morning when I was looking at the news of like something that we haven't really seen before or very much of, because it was so exclusive to these big blockbuster single individual, you know, tentpole games.
Yeah.
And now it's about the whole service. And I know Christians, you know, Netflix future is something that we'll constantly be talking about. But I think when Taco Bell starts making a deal with Microsoft for Ultimate, and the reason that I wanted to call out the Ultimate specifically is because that includes PC, so that you don't even need an Xbox to take advantage of that.
Right.
So anyway, that's my story of the week. A little weird one.
No, it's
didn't
cool.
pop up on the radar, but from a business standpoint, it seemed interesting to me to call out.
Yeah, I didn't, you know, it didn't even register to me that, yeah, you usually see those, you know, with Halo or Mortal Kombat or tied in, as you said, to a specific game. But to have it be, you know, you're getting 100 plus games and $5 of tacos, you know, is a pretty big deal. And, you know, this brings me to something that maybe you have insight on that we might not. We speculate all the time about what these kinds of services mean for game developers individually, and how games, you know, if I'm paying $10 for 100 games, how does that break down for the individual developers of a game? Do you have any insight on the sort of revenue model? Is that something that's sustainable, or is this the kind of thing that's going to start for a few years and then going to have to be, the price is going to have to go up or else nobody's going to make any money?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, to be honest, I think time will still tell. I think that it's still early days for that kind of stuff. And I can't get into specifics. And in many ways, I don't even know some of the specifics about the real money behind that stuff. I will say that I think that it's still evolving and they're trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
And so I don't know, will the price stay what it is? I think it's kind of got to, but I think that they still, I think it's irrefutable from a customer's perspective that it's going to be something that people will continue to want. I do think Microsoft is, for the most part, putting their money where their mouth is behind the scenes. I'll be vague in that regard. So I think they're trying to make it work. And I think offering like something, however this, you know, again, as I mentioned, in the doc that you run beforehand, I didn't know about this before I had left Microsoft. So this isn't, you know, I don't have some insider information. I just saw this morning. Mm-hmm. But you know, somebody's made this deal on purpose to get exposure to those developers, you know? And so the more, the merrier for them. So, yeah,
I think it's brilliant. I mean, I think getting a taste of Xbox Game Pass. I mean, Christian and I are both huge fans of Game Pass just as a service because of the value proposition. And I noticed this weekend, so many people are playing The Outer Worlds, for example. And we'll get to that when we get talk about the games we've been playing. We'll talk about that game as well. But I think The Outer Worlds to me feels like the first time that the Netflix thing is happening in games where so many people are playing it because they already had the service. That it's like, yeah, I'll watch Stranger Things because – and we all watch Stranger Things when it comes out because I have Netflix already anyway, and now I kind of want to be in on this conversation of something that everybody agrees is really good. And, you know, it feels like it's happening. And it's amazing that a game of that size and scope and prominence, you know, it's a big AAA release. That's a big tentpole holiday game. And people are getting it for free with $5 of Taco Bell. You know, I think that really is a big moment and definitely worth noting.
Yeah, it'll hook people, right? I mean, especially if you're in that, you know, in that camp of loving those RPGs, you know, and that's, I assume Outer Worlds is $60, right? It's a traditional, you know, box product game. And I think what service you guys are playing it on Game Pass, what else? It's not on Steam, is that right? Did I read that too?
It is on the Epic Game Store and the Microsoft or the Xbox Game Store. Apologies to Microsoft. You change the name of your PC Game Store so often. And
it's also on PlayStation 4.
And it's also on PlayStation 4.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
But on PC, it's Epic or whatever Microsoft's current name for their game store is called.
Right. Yeah, the Windows Store or whatever. Yeah, I mean, what occurred to me this morning is I don't think I have Ultimate, Xbox Pass Ultimate, and so I'll play it on PC when I get to it. And so, you know, for me even, I was like, well, I better upgrade to Ultimate because I want to play, you know, I would have played on Steam probably, but it hooks you in because that's a game that I would get the service for because it's my
sounds
my
like you
jam.
Need to go. You need to go buy five tacos, man.
That's true. I guess. I guess I better go there. It's working. Darn it,
Christian. You got any other things to point out about this story?
No, I think we're going to see more of this, right? More and more of this type of promotion where it is less about a specific game and more about the package of games, right? Like I saw my first in a long time commercial for PlayStation Now on TV. I forget if it was during a World Series game or shortly before and after. That's kind of all I'm watching on live TV. But it was like a big live action commercial with like Kratos falling out of the sky and a live action Nathan Drake falling out of the sky and landing in somebody's room. And it's advertising, you know, all these big games you can play on PlayStation Now right now for a subscription. And I think we're going to see more and more of that as the subscription becomes the killer app, right? Like it used to be, what's the expression? Like the game that sells the console seller. I think it's not a
killer
game
app,
anymore. It's not a game anymore. Now it literally is a killer app, right? It's like it's an application that runs all this other stuff. So I think we'll see a lot more of this in the future as consoles try to or services try to differentiate themselves from one another. It'll be fascinating to track, though.
How long until I, you know, buy two McFlurries and get a Stadia subscription for a month? You know, that's
two McFlurries. You'll be told you'll get a Stadia subscription, but then you won't get it for 3 months after you think you're going to get it. And even though you are the first person to get a McFlurry, you might not get your Stadia subscription until a few months after that. And also your controller doesn't work.
Sounds like one founder is a little disgruntled.
Oh boy,
Christian, official founder.
Not yet. I mean, I think I am, but who knows when it will get here? Per their messaging now.
All right. Well, then, what, sir, is your story of the week, Mr. Spiceman?
It's got to be, and they're kind of two on here, but I think we can roll them into one. I think it's got to be the delays of games. The biggest game for me, or the game I was most excited about, is The Last of Us Part 2 has been officially
February
delayed.
February is going to be the biggest month. February! What are we going to do? I got to clear my schedule. February, there's so many things coming out. Oh my God, all the Ubisoft games are coming out. Last of Us 2 now is coming out. February is going to – it's going to end me. What am I going to do for February?
Well, the good news is you're okay.
All of a sudden. Yeah. Like February has opened up, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, tell your partner that Valentine's Day is back on.
Yeah.
Last of Us has been pushed to May 29th. And while – so I think there's kind of a couple stories here in regard to Last of Us. And also, yeah, all those Ubisoft games have also been pushed. Gods and Monsters, Rainbow Six Quarantine, and Watch Dogs Legion have all been pushed into their, quote, next fiscal year, which is April 2020-ish. So I think the story with Last of Us to me is the idea that they had just announced the February date. Like, you were there as they made a big presentation about it. It was part of their state of play, and it was February 2020. And now here we are 3 weeks later. And
yeah, they didn't need nobody forced them to announce the release date 3 weeks ago.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I guess maybe somebody did, but
someone. Yeah. But they could have had that hands on thing and people still would have been jazzed about it. And that, yeah, I don't think that event would have suffered without it. But the other side of the story is, you know, we talk about it on this show enough, the idea of crunch and the culture that goes into making these games that we love. And so I think if giving them more time to make the game and hopefully can alleviate some of that crunch, which I'm not sure, I'm speculating here. Like, I think it's a good thing in several regards to delay a game. One, you hopefully make it right. And two, hopefully you're able to take a breath a little bit and not work people 100 hours a day, you know, to hit that February release.
I think it's very funny if the, you know, the developers on Gods and Monsters were like, oh, really? Last of Us 2, you got to come out right when okay, let's delay to May. We'll get out of the way of Last of Us 2 and we'll have more time to make Gods and Monsters amazing. And then they announce it on their investor call, and then Last of Us 2 is like, we're going into May, and they're like, son of a, you
know? Yeah, Last of Us 2 crawls out from the bush holding a brick and is like, we gotcha. Yeah.
Tim, I'm so curious. Obviously, you've been on the other side of some very, very big games. I was baffled by this. I mean, games get delayed all the time, and I look at it as a positive thing generally that a game is getting delayed, because it means the game's not going to, you know, that they have more time to polish and all those things that you would want. But I'm baffled by the proximity of the first time we heard a release date to we're delaying. Can you understand that, or is it, does it seem odd to you?
Oh, okay. Yeah. I didn't see you going that direction. I can, I mean, I'll take some wild guesses at your particular question. The big shows like E3 and any big announcement, there's so much pressure that goes in with that, and so much, sort of top-down pressure that I think oftentimes developers don't have full control over what they would rather say to the public when they would rather say it. Mm. And so I think that pressure ends up sort of creating a false narrative for people. And then, it could very well be that the developers at the time were saying, hey, you shouldn't do this. We shouldn't announce yet. We're not ready. I'm totally guessing. I have no behind the scenes information, but been there before. And, you know, just what needed to happen happened from the organization standpoint. And then down the road, months from that announcement, they're like, no, really, this is where we are. We need more time. And then finally, you know, it's like the rubber meets the road. They realize, okay, they weren't fibbing to us earlier. They were actually telling the truth, and they need more time. And so, yeah. You know, it's all about what's on screen. It's all about the code. So what's there is there. They can't really deny it. And I think Naughty Dog has such a great track record that Sony wouldn't want to mess that up. Right. So
yeah,
to force it out to, so, you know, when I saw these news items on your list, I was just like, go for it. Like, this is great. Good for them. And, you know, you guys talk about it often, and I think you guys are always good at balancing your sort of message of sadness and happiness with delays like this, as Christian just did. I want to get to a day where delays are not news, to be honest. They're not news in other mediums. I don't know why they're such a big deal for games. There isn't some situation where I think the game developers owe something to, unless you're in a Kickstarter situation or something like that, where you've forked up some dough for it, there isn't an obligation. The game should come out when it's feasible for both the publisher and for the developer. I think it's more the power to them on these delays, to be honest.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting perspective. Do you from a developer's perspective, feel like pre-order incentives and, you know, the whole business side of pre-ordering create some of that pressure and create some of that feeling of entitlement from the purchaser?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I think that's another dysfunctional aspect of the business is that pre-order culture. Yeah. And as you guys probably know, there it's very difficult to predict, you know, predict hits and to know what's going to be success or not. So pre-orders have been for many years, although I think that's going away because all these different business models, they were kind of one of the only ways that publishers could have an indication of something that something might be a hit. You know, and so that kind of ran away over the years and got more and more important to people,
right.
those pre-order numbers. And so then obviously once they grow in importance, then meeting your dates of that pre-order becomes more important when I really think the focus just shifted away from the right things onto the wrong things, in my opinion. So I'm really happy to see, you know, both Sony and Ubisoft have been on a roll for a while with their first party stuff, and I'm really happy to see that they're standing behind their developers and giving them the time that they need, to be honest.
Yeah. I think the other side, I agree with almost everything you said, Tim. I think the other side of it though, like why delays are news, is the same reason that release date announcements are news. Like you can't have your cake and eat it too, right? You can't make a big event out of a premiere or something at like the VGAs or E3 or your own kind of branded event, announce a release date and then not expect you changing that to be news. And I think it is news in other business as well. I like movies when, you know, a Marvel movie gets moved up or something gets moved back or moved from Christmas to summer, like that makes the rounds. I don't think it makes it quite as big. There's not as necessarily a big of a backlash to it. And I think you hit the nail on the head, because the pre-order things aren't the same with movies. It's not like buy your Rise of the Skywalker tickets now and get this free thing, and buy the $100 Rise of the Skywalker ticket and get this thing. Like it's just, oh dang, I was gonna see that, well now I'll see it next month. You know, but I think they put that date in you and you kind of build a lot of people. The games are longer, so you build your sick days around it. And I understand why the idea of a date being moved can be big news still.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of sick dates around it, Christian, I know that you were, I don't know how much joking about taking some days off when it was going to be February 21st. But I'm curious how you feel. I don't know if you've looked at the calendar. May 29th is a Friday. May 2019 it's a Friday, and then we have that 1 week.
I know.
And then the next week is E3.
I looked, and it is. Sony has never been shy of E3. It seems like they've had big releases come out on E3, and this dropping right before. I don't know what if that says that E3 is officially dead or that Christian's officially not going to E3.
Well, I'm so curious. Like, so all these big question marks for me just strategically on that, because if it hits that date, we had a year where Sony didn't attend E3. Are they also not attending E3 2020? We know PlayStation 5 is supposed to be holiday 2020. So one would assume they'd be back in force at E3 2020 to show off their new hardware. Do they show, you know, they just dropped one of the biggest games of the entire generation a week before? Are they going to show that game on PlayStation 5 hardware with no load times? Is that part of what we may see there? I mean, it is, to me, it's kind of a tantalizing strategic question of why that date. You know, it's right before E3. I'm so curious. It's going to be interesting. And now we're all going to be all rushing to play it before we all get bogged down in E3 madness.
Yeah, I think you've got a window between, and I do, you kind of hinted at it here, and I think we've talked about it on past shows. I do think the PlayStation 5 is going to support backwards compatibility in a big way, and I imagine there will be some way that they will tout how you can play your, you know, whether it's faster load times like Spider-Man they've shown already, like what kind of up-resing or incentive there is to play Last of Us 2 on your new hardware, like kind of give you a reason to upgrade hardware. But there is a window, right, to get this release out before that new hardware launches, even though Sony, I keep not looking this up, but I keep saying it to people. Other people look it up, and I'm like, that's what I thought. Like God of War 2 came out after the PlayStation 3 came out. Like Sony's done this before, and they kind of drop their games when they're out and when they're ready. And so this might be another case of it, but the timing, that calendar, those 12 months, they fill up fast, Jeff. You know, they fill up really fast.
And they've been on the record saying this is the longest game Naughty Dog has ever made, the biggest game, twice as long as the first Last of Us. And you get, now we get a week to play it. I'm just like, oh, man. Oh, boy. But, you know, first world problems.
Yes.
We should also not give short shrift. I mean, obviously, that's the biggest marquee delay, but we should not get give short shrift to the big Ubisoft delays, because those are big. And it's not just one. It's the big, all big games that we know are coming from Ubisoft. Although in that same investor call, they mentioned they have two other AAA games coming in the same fiscal year. But Gods and Monsters, Rainbow Six Quarantine, and Watch Dogs Legion all are being pushed.
And they gave a very different reason for why.
Yes, it's because Ghost Recon underperformed.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm wondering how much they're rethinking, because Tim, you know, mentioned it, and Ubisoft has done, I think they've been on a great track record of releasing some amazing games and then releasing some mediocre games that become amazing games through continued support. But I feel like this latest Ghost Recon was kind of the biggest stinker out of the gate, and maybe it might grow into something great, but it certainly seemed like fans weren't willing to give it the same opportunity they did some past games. So I wonder how much rethinking of these other games, Gods and Monsters, Quarantine, and Watch Dogs Legion. I put the S in the wrong place all the time. I wonder how much they're rethinking that quote unquote Ubisoft formula, you know, to making them and to releasing them and getting them out in maybe a more polished state than the original plan was.
Well, they straight up said that they thought the reason that Ghost Recon underperformed, both from a sales perspective and from a critical perspective, was because it was released too close to a live, updated predecessor, that its sequel came out too soon, basically.
I think John Barthaw in the first one, and it was like pretty good missions.
Yeah. And, totally. And Tim, I think one of the things that has always been, you've been involved in the Halo franchise so intimately. Halo stays away long enough for people to miss it, and new releases in the Halo franchise feel like a big deal because it takes a few years for them to come around. Have you always felt that that's a positive, an important thing for the franchise to feel important?
Yeah. I mean, in general, yes. I think it depends on the product, though, too. Definitely things have changed, you know, as you guys have talked a lot about over the past few years. And so if your goals are more in the sort of live space, then, you know, it's maybe a different answer to your question. But for, I think, what Ubisoft is generally trying to do with most of those games, though, I guess, is Quarantine a add-on to, that's not a new,
no, it's own game. It's like a horror take on that Rainbow Six, okay. But it is not part of Siege, as far as I know.
And it's not supposed to replace Siege either. It's not like a sequel to Siege. It's like this side thing.
Yeah,
that's even weirder to me then. I haven't done enough research on that one in particular. So, but you know, Gods and Monsters seems like kind of its own thing, and a bit maybe not niche, but a little bit smaller. Although I don't know if it's a Zelda like, then maybe it is big. But Watch Dogs specifically is another good example of like, yeah, give it space. It should be a tent pole. They definitely seem to want it to be. They have a lot of good people attached to it. So yeah, I've always believed in you need to have that room to breathe. And it's a constant debate behind closed doors about that. You know, and it's for good reason, because it's all, you know, the money has to work, right? You have to have the money coming in. And if games do take too long, to counter my point on delays, I don't mean delays without repercussions or without goals, right? There still should be goals in mind. And the P&L and everything still needs to work. Delays can't happen just because somebody wants them to, but if they're necessary for the greater good and sort of the longer term planning of something, like a franchise, like Watch Dogs as an example, though Watch Dogs 2 was quite a while ago, right? As one example.
I think so. I think it was at least 3 years ago, I think. Yeah.
But Ghost Recon is a good example of I think somebody who I put quite a few, I haven't played the recent mission that you're talking about, but I put a lot of hours into the last one. And Do I feel like I want to play some more of that right now? Probably not, because I did, it did, you know, string me along for quite a while. So that timing of that franchise stuff is, you do need to give it room to breathe. And there's constantly talk about sort of that concept of quote unquote going dark with some of these bigger games. You know, you want to have a section of time where, you know, almost people are not talking about X franchise, because you want there to be quiet. And I think Kojima's, you know, the ultimate example of that with the Metal Gear series specifically, right? There was just blackout period for a long, long time, and then it pops back up. And a lot of publishers don't let that room, they don't give that room to breathe, where there is that silence of like, what's going to happen? You know, what's the mysterious next step for X franchise? Because they kind of just keep it in the front of people's minds too much. So.
Such an interesting perspective, and I love having you on to talk about it. It's awesome. My story of the week is the other big story, the other crazy bit of news regarding Bethesda and what Bethesda is doing right now with Fallout 76. Fallout 76, we all know, had a relatively rocky launch, but it kind of had gained some footing. I know we had actually read a few emails here on the show of people really passionately defending the game and saying
and
that
E3 was big for them, not to jump in, but like they updated a lot of free stuff and really built their E3 about, we hear you community, here's what we're doing. And yeah, people seem jazzed.
Yeah. We actually got direct feedback from people who were saying, hey, give it another chance. The game is really finding a community and finding its footing, and it's really building from the ground up and becoming something. And I actually was happy to hear that. I'm a fan of Bethesda games. I'm a fan of the Fallout series. And it wasn't enough to get me to back into it. But I was rooting for it. You want to have these little comeback stories. Well, and then Bethesda makes this announcement this week that is very strange and seems to throw away a lot of that goodwill, at least from my perspective. They announced a premium service, which costs $12.99 a month, or you can buy an annual fee version for $99 a year. And it gives you a bunch of in-game doodads, and most importantly, access to what they were calling a private server, so that you can bring some of your friends. Actually, only one person has to actually have the subscription. You can have people that don't have the subscription on your private server. But you have a private server and you get to do certain things with it, and you get a bunch of perks in the game. Well, then we come to find out that as with a lot of the stuff with Fallout 76, it all doesn't really work exactly as they said. And there's a lot of bugs. Some of the private servers aren't actually private.
Like, it's not like your new server. It's like this world's been lived in. It's like, and you can have your private house. Other people are leaving. Don't worry about them.
There are weird bugs, like pets going missing, unlimited storage units that actually destroys the things you put into it. Placing your premium tent, the special like in-game tent that you get for the premium service, placing that on the ground has, for some players, resulted in every single player on the server immediately getting booted. Bugs. And this is stuff that they're now charging for. Charging, I might add, a higher monthly subscription than Game Pass, which is 100 games. This is for one game and for just some part of one game. And so players are justifiably kind of upset about this. And I don't understand this move. Tim, maybe you can shed some light on what this is or express your feelings about what you're seeing Bethesda doing with Fallout 76.
I don't understand it either, to be honest. Like I saw this and I'm sorry to kind of laugh, but it's just such a weird, I mean, I'm happy. I'm a Fallout fan. I don't play 76, but I love the franchise. And so I was happy to see that they were kind of digging themselves out of where they started, over time. But it doesn't feel like they're to the point yet where they can do something like this, even without the bugs, you know, bugs aside, the charging for the servers. I mean, I don't know if Minecraft is still charging for private servers. Are they? They may have an option.
I don't know.
But I'm just kind of trying to think of a community-based game that has private servers that, you know, that would be running separately, that that the service might need to support in some way, that does cost money, you know, to the publisher. And so that's the reason they're doing this, probably because it does cost them money to run these servers. But there's kind of a, I would think, a timing element to this. There's a right time to start introducing this stuff when you really have your feet underneath you and you have a, you know, just kind of build of momentum. And maybe they just kind of predicted poorly that, because I don't think they have, I'm glad they're doing well, but I don't think they're quite ready for this kind of move. And you make a good point on the price point compared to something like Game Pass. It just, it's very weird. And also I would bet that there's not so many servers that they're going to be requesting, that people are going to be requesting, that would even justify. I'm sure it's doing well, but how many people are really going to, you know, get private servers going? So I don't know. Yeah, it's a baffling one to me. And the bugs are just, it's just too bad, because that's kind of a double whammy for them, because the game launched how it did. So
yeah, and you know, you say you think when you are going to start actually asking people to pay money for this extra stuff, make sure the extra stuff works. That's pretty,
yeah.
It's, you know, it just makes the sting harder when you feels like, well, I paid for this and it's still buggy. I think, you know, we were in a world where World of Warcraft cost $14.99 a month, and MMOs in general were sort of in that $15 a month place. But it feels like in the post Game Pass, Apple Gaming, Apple Arcade, excuse me, world, it just feels like that price point for one game, one experience, especially when it, as you said, it sort of hasn't even justified its existence to that extent yet. It just feels like you had to rethink that.
Yeah, there might be something. I don't know. Again, I haven't played, so maybe you guys, I forget how much you played 76, if at all, like dabbling maybe in the early days. But maybe there's something we don't know about from a community standpoint, where there's just a bunch of server tools that just are really necessary for that game to work. But again, I just can't see a $13 or, you know, $100 a month justification for that. It just seems way out of whack. Yeah, especially in this world of all of these game services.
Yeah. Christian, what's your take on this?
Yeah, I mean, I think the easy reaction is to kind of laugh and giggle, but at the same time, it's like laughing at a blooper reel, right? Where, yes, we are human, we will giggle. But I think it's truly unfortunate. It is a game that I did not enjoy when it came out, but was rooting for. And I liked that their approach to E3 was kind of, you know, we hear you, we're with you, we're doing this stuff. And I just think it's super unfortunate they launched with this now. And I think it was, you know, the first person to purchase it lost all their stuff. It's just like, at this point, I'm hoping for a win, right? It's like, I'm not watching football this year. Who's like the Lions of the days of old, or the Browns? You're like, just get a win at some point.
Miami, yeah. Miami's in that place this year.
Yes. Okay, they've been there a lot.
you know, tanking this season. It's okay, not really applicable, but yeah.
But it's like that approach where it's like, I would love for this to be a hit, right? And like, have people happily give their money and feel like it's worth it. I think that's the part of the value equation. And people in the chat are pointing out, and like you mentioned, Jeff, like comparing it to that MMO subscription fee. But it needs to be justified. It needs to be earned. And so I think people that were paying their WoW subscription felt like they were getting the content and getting the stuff in the game that kind of justified that. And here it seemed like they had a price point and not necessarily content to fill it yet. And then the content that is there, it's not delivering on its promise. And so I think it's really unfortunate. I don't know how many more chances, you know, this game or the next live service Bethesda game gets that people are going to take a chance on it, which is too bad, because they have shown that they can make a really great experience with Elder Scrolls if given enough time to really make it into something. So I hope they're able to find a way and maybe not turn Fallout 76 around, but turn around that style of game or business model where everybody's really happy.
And this is right on the heels of them announcing a delay for their big next DLC pack, the Wastelanders update that they've been talking about. Just got a big delay. It's like, it just all feels so wrongheaded to say, oh yeah, we didn't deliver on the date we wanted for that thing that you guys were all excited, but we'll definitely sell you something that's also a little buggy. And man, it just, yeah, bummer. All right, well, let's move on and talk about all the games that are coming out now that we're playing, and in some older games too. But first, I want to thank our sponsor, which is Brooklyn and my sheets, the sheets that I sleep on every night. In fact, on the rare occasions when we have to put different sheets on our bed because both my sets of Brooklinens are in the wash or haven't been washed, I am so chagrined. It is scratchy and not great. I am spoiled. I am spoiled by my Brooklinen sheets. This is luxury feeling fabric, luxury feeling sheets in my bed. I love sleep. I'm somebody, I have two young kids. I value my sleep more than almost anything. And when I crawl into my Brooklinen sheets, I know I've become a snob. I don't even like hotel sheets anymore because these are so nice. I'm not joking. I really do. I love them. And Brooklinen is the whole point of the company is to give you that luxury feel without the luxury price. I was founded in 2014 and quickly became one of the most popular online bedding companies. They were named the winner of the best online bedding category by Good Housekeeping. They have rave reviews from Business Insider, Apartment Therapy, Men's Health, over 35,000 five-star reviews, more than any other online bedding company, and 500,000 happy sleepers. These are luxury sheets, towels, bedding, and almost all the bedding that you get, you'll find, is marked up as much as 300%. But Brooklinen, because it's online, because it's direct to you, can give you that luxury quality without the luxury price. And they don't just feel great, they look great too. They've got a whole bunch of over 20 colors and patterns. My wife had a really good time finding patterns that she was excited about. I'm excited about how it makes me sleep well. My Brooklinen sheets are truly, I will honestly tell you, the most comfortable sheets that I have ever slept on. Their towels are great too. I haven't tried the towels either yet. I got to get some of those. But I recommend my Brooklinens to my friends, my family, or just treating yourself. You can send them as a gift or just treat yourself. And Brooklinen.com is giving an exclusive offer just for our listeners. Get 10% off and free shipping when you use promo code DLC at brooklinen.com. And Brooklinen is so confident in their product that all of their sheets, comforters, and towels come with a lifetime warranty. But the only way to get 10% off and free shipping is to use promo code DLC at brooklinen.com. That's BROOKLINEN.com, promo code DLC. Brooklinen, these really are the best sheets ever. Time to talk about the games we have been playing. And Tim, I have to tell you, I am such a fan of your podcast. Hearing developers talking about games, talking about the nitty gritty of game development, and looking at classics and games that are huge and games that maybe not so huge but memorable. It's so fascinating, and I think maybe it means that you've been playing stuff that's kind of older, right?
Right. Well, thanks. I appreciate that. Yeah, Brett, we kind of consider ourselves the delicious dish of gaming podcasts for anyone who the Saturday Night Live reference. Yeah, we're kind of the
cerebral. You're cerebral.
The cerebral pop. Academic. Yeah. We get into the nitty gritty for sure. So yeah, unfortunately, because I'm a bit kind of on a break right now, so I'm not really like playing anything hardcore, so I'm playing mainly for the podcast. So because we play older games, Eternal Darkness is our current game. We like to play sort of a spooky Halloweeny kind of game in October, so that was our choice this year, and so that's been fun. Anyone who hasn't, it's actually pretty difficult to get these days because it hasn't been re-released in anything, and the rights seem to be all kind of messed up and such with Nintendo. So you have to play it on the original GameCube. But definitely, if you've never played that one, I definitely would suggest it. It's a really interesting survival horror-ish with a bunch of extra little things in there that a lot of survival horror games don't have, and cosmic horror.
Head, man. That game messes with your head.
Yeah, yeah. The insanity meter stuff is really cool, so we talk a lot about that. Yeah, so that's been fun. But before that, we played our previous game was Doom due to the anniversary, and obviously it was, as you guys mentioned, it was released on a bunch of different, you know, the originals were released on Switch and a few other things that they had never been on before, despite some of the ports and stuff that I think you guys mentioned, which was unfortunate. And I actually never got around to playing Doom 2016 Reboot, or whatever you call that, just didn't get time when it had come out. So we usually play a bonus episode to sort of compare the classic game with sort of the modern iteration of that same game. So luckily that had come out. So I've been enjoying kind of, you know, playing that for the first time, and that team did an amazing job rekindling what that, you know, franchise was and is. But you guys talked at length over the years about that, so no need to get into that. I did want to mention Sigil, though, which I forget if you guys had played any of. Did you guys play?
I have not played, you know, I have followed it, and I'm fascinated by it. I'd love to get your take on it, like how well it fits into that classic game. I've heard it really does feel like, you know, it could be the expansion pack that came out 30 years ago or whatever.
Oh, he did a great job. Yeah, we're actually, I don't want to jinx it, but usually for our podcast, we try to get somebody who worked on the original game to come on and kind of talk about old times and talk about their process and stuff. And so I think we're going to get John Romero on actually to talk about Doom original, but also to talk about Sigil. So for those who don't know, John, for the anniversary released essentially a fifth episode, so to speak, for the original Doom called Sigil. And it's very, very good. We talk a lot about level design, a lot of it because that's my background before creative direction. I was a level designer. And so it's something that Brett and I spent a lot of time on. And John, also level designer, Romero. And it's sort of like, because when we played the original, and people, if they care, they should go listen to our series on it. So I won't get into the details. But when you play the original, you see sort of the early days of level design happening, 3D first-person level design. And so we talked a lot about that. But Sigil's cool because you see sort of if the people of that time were time-traveled back to make the original Doom, but had all the sort of modern level design skills that they have today, but we're using those same tools. And that's what John did with Sigil. Like, it feels like a modern version of the first Doom, if that makes sense. He uses very similar tricks that we use today. Even just the geometry is more interesting. There's some light puzzles happening, more so than the original. So I loved it. I played all but the last level, and so I'll finish it before we have him on, but I definitely recommend it for any Doom sort of fan, for sure. But if you're just interested to sort of see where it kind of all started, I mean, yeah, Castle, you know, Wolfenstein 3D is there too, but Doom is really where first person, you know, traditional level design really started. And Sigil's, it's an homage, it's a love letter, whatever you want to say. And John, I think it's just, and it, you know, it's free. So it's like the, you know, the digital version. So it's, and I think John has always been good at trying to sort of be open and give back to, especially the id community. I think it's a delight. So even though it's Doom.
And I really hope that you guys can make that conversation happen, because I would love to hear you talk to him about it.
Yeah, fingers crossed it doesn't fall through, but yeah, I don't want to jinx it.
I would like, do you have any specific examples of those tricks you're talking about that separate it, that make it feel modern? Are there any specific things that you can point out that would be an example?
Yeah, I'd give you some examples, but again, like we talk ad nauseum about it on the podcast, but I think the two big ones for me, one is sort of the overall, like I'll talk about a micro and a macro really quickly. The macro side is like the overall structure of the level is much more modern. And what I mean by that is if you play, and we had the luxury of playing the original Doom back to back with Sigil, right? So we played them like side by side. So they're fresh in our memory, but The flow of the levels in Sigil are very circular. So you're kind of returning back to areas that you've been through before, and it has a lot more logical sort of sense the way that it's structured overall. And those were things that we didn't think of and do enough of back in the old days because we just didn't know. Like, things were generally linear, right? And they kind of went in one direction and kind of, you know, meandered in that direction, and they weren't really thought through all the time. Sometimes they were, but not always. And I think John kind of shows how that macro structure can really be modernized. And the other one is he really is really smart with his sight lines in Sigil. He's just very clever with how to guide the player, you know, moving through just from a moment to moment perspective. And I don't know if he just did a lot of playtesting with it or if it's just some of his instincts kicking in, but when you're playing, really look for sight lines and how you're guided toward a specific thing, because, you know, good level design, that's happening naturally. You're not, you know, it's happening before you even realize it's happening, or you ideally you never realize it. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. I've noticed that, recently, actually, there's been a few games that I felt like I had complete freedom to go where I wanted to go. Mm-hmm. And then I went, well, now I'm just going to get totally lost, but I ended up going the right way. And I felt like that's the magic of good level design, is that I felt like I was making this decision, and yet there was an unseen hand helping me, subtly influencing me to get me to go where I needed to go.
Yep.
So that I didn't end up lost.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like good direction in film, right? You don't want to see it, but you know, it's there.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. Awesome. So I hope people listen to the Dev Game Club podcast, because it is excellent. Anything else you've been playing?
I guess the only other quick one I'll shout out in a totally opposite direction that I've kind of in some of my my commute that I've played is Mini Metro on iOS. I know it's a little older. I think it's been out for a couple of years, maybe, or a year or so. I don't know the original release date because they have a follow-up that's in Apple Arcade. So it's a little bit relevant because that just came out, called Mini It's more focused on streets, I think, than metros. But I'm a big fan of like economical design and sort of when art, design, and audio all really work together well. Have you guys played Mini Metro at all? I forget.
Yeah, I played some of it. I found it very fun.
Yeah, it's fun, but it's also just so like slick, you know? It's just the music's amazing, and the audio design is amazing. And for anyone who hasn't played it, it's a very simple, like, it looks like the metro map in London or France. That's just this top down sort of, you know, lines, colored lines, but you're actually manipulating the lines yourselves and kind of connecting the stations as you're kind of getting the people to flow through the world. And the people are represented by essentially just, shapes, primary shapes. And so it's very slick, and almost like, meditative, you know, to play. So I've really been enjoying that if I just want to kind of chill out, but it's just really elegantly designed. So I wanted to give a quick shout out to Mini Metro. I haven't played the follow-up yet. I want to ask you guys later about Apple Arcade, if either of you, I forget, I'm a few episodes behind, by the way, so I don't know if you guys have talked about it before, but
Well, Christian has definitely put more time into Apple Arcade than I find it a bit overwhelming to be like, here's 70 games. You know, go ahead. So I just haven't been gaming on my phone as much anymore. I find myself just not interested in using that platform to game on as much, but I have it because I have the new phone, so I got to get onto it. But Christian, you have been doing a lot more Apple Arcading than I.
Yeah, and I've actually just changed my approach to it, I think, because of what you said, Jeff. I found it being, I found it so overwhelming, and they have done a good job of adding interesting games. I don't know if it's weekly or not, but it seems like on a fairly regular cadence. And I'm like, ooh, I'll download that one and I'll add it. And I'll download that one and I'll add it. And then I realized, like, I had 20 games on my phone, and I found myself playing the service less because I would do the equivalent of like channel surfing or like, you know, like just scrolling through Netflix.
It needs to have a portal. It needs to be like the Apple Arcade button on your phone.
Yeah.
And then you go to that, and then it's like, it's like Steam or something, you know, it feels like it's its own place. and you can see all these cool things and it can surface cool things and it can feel more directed, I think, if they did that. I don't understand the idea of just this shotgun approach of, you know, drinking from the fire hose onto my phone. I don't like it.
And so what I've done now is I deleted all of the games off my phone except for, well, I was going to pick up my phone and double check, but my phone may or may not be streaming a baseball game right now. but I deleted all of them off my phone except for like the three I'm actively, you know, playing and I want to, air quote, beat them, like finish them before moving on to the next. Cause what I found myself doing was playing 5 minutes of this and 5 minutes of that. And oh, that's fun, but ooh, look at this. Oh, this is a new one. I got to play this. And then I don't really play or enjoy any of them. You know, I'm just kind of overwhelmed. So, right now, the one I'm spending the most time with is Bleak Sword still, which I adore. And I really do like it. So I want to finish it. I want to see it through. And I think right now, because there are so many good games on Apple Arcade that I haven't been giving any of them enough time. So I'm trying to dial back my approach and I'm just going to play one until I, you know, beat it or am sick of it and then move on to the next one and not try to dabble in all of them because then I won't play any.
Yeah. Yeah, I was browsing it tonight, kind of just seeing what all the games are that are on there. And I want to play a lot of them.
There's a lot of good stuff.
I'm overwhelmed just looking at the trailer, you know, for them. Yes. And I'm just like, oh, man, how am I gonna find the time?
Yeah.
Yes. So I don't know.
If only there was some way we could sum all that up.
There it is.
Yes. I was actually there was just an elaborate segue. I wanted you to play that. So I was trying to build it up to try to make it happen.
Well done.
I did it.
Well, Christian and I have both been playing the same two games this week.
The same two Outer games. Worlds,
which is, it, I mean, we're in full on too many games town right now with all of the things to play. And those two games are Outer Worlds and Call of Duty Modern Warfare. Christian, where would you like to start?
Let's start with Outer Worlds.
Okay. Yes. So Outer Worlds is the game that won our best of E3, our favorite game of E3 as a show in 2019. So we were both really excited about this game coming out. I mean, there is not anything that is more my wheelhouse than this is the kind of game I love. Big, sprawling role-playing games with interesting places to explore, lots of quests and lots of inventory management. I mean, that is just my jam. And it's from Obsidian, who has a track record of making very excellent games. Games very much in the style of Fallout games, you know, an actual Fallout sequel they made, and they made a sequel to Mass Effect or a port of, or not. Yeah. Sort of in that world, that BioWare world. So they, you know, they are one of the major players in these kinds of role-playing games. Christian, how do you feel about Outer Worlds?
I adore it. So I should say up top, I maybe have spent more time with it than you, I think.
Definitely.
I was given a code. I'm playing it on PlayStation 4, which is where I got my first code. I'll be annoying and say first code. I was really, really liking the game. And I was talking to a press contact saying how much I liked it, saying, I think I'm going to buy it on PC because I wanted to see how pretty it can look. And they were very...
Don't you have it for free on PC because of Game Pass?
Well, it was before it came out. I don't know. The hard part about Game Pass is I'm not sure if it's on console or PC Game Pass. Listeners, check, because it's not always one-to-one parity. I'm, because of my first world problems of getting review code, I'm not sure. I cannot answer that question. I did not look it up. But I was given a code for it on PC as well before it came out and started spending time with it on PC and realized now I'm never going to finish it on PS4 because I keep playing it on PC. But I put a lot, I have not finished a playthrough yet on PS4 because my PC version distracted me and I'm playing very differently on PC than I am on PS4. I absolutely adore this game, Jeff. I think it is fantastic. To me, it combines the choice and dialogue and character building of some of the best Bethesda, or as you mentioned, kind of that Mass Effect style of your choices having impact in the world, that BioWare approach. And the worlds themselves to me feel like they have a mix of like BioShock Infinite, kind of like corporation overlord, neon kind of like futuristic but yet oddly familiar aesthetic combined with something like No Man's Sky when you're kind of out in the wilds, so to speak, just truly stunning and gorgeous. And then I really,
and also, you know what it has a hint of also, and this is a Wayback Machine reference, but Space Quest.
Oh yeah.
Oh no. It seriously,
like, because it has a sense of humor. Yes. All the time. And like, I really haven't seen that kind of humor in a, there was Headlander.
Yeah.
had that recently. This is like a big sprawling role-playing game that has sort of like Space Questian sense of humor and parody that's infused in its DNA.
Yeah. And wow. I should say this now as our listeners, thank you to chat, Red Sky and Reef Jackson. Outer Worlds is on Xbox and PC Game Pass. So yes, I had it on PC because it, before Game Pass. But yes, in that sense of humor too, Jeff, to continue on that path, is it's not heavy-handed, right? Like, and whether or not the humor in Borderlands 3 or any Borderlands is to your style, I think you can agree that it is very in-your-face humor, right? It's like joke, joke, joke. And this is a world where there is stuff that is bitingly funny, but not in your face about it. They're not slapping you and being like, here's a joke, or like that type of approach where you're just walking in a world and you might not notice anything. There's signage on buildings that would live in that world the way they're developed, but also are so funny when observed, especially depending on where your character is in that moment and the conversations, the characters. Another reason I haven't finished a single playthrough on this game yet is that I find myself wanting to do the side missions because I find the characters to be so engaging and interesting and funny. And the biggest thing for me, I think, what's really pulled me into this world, aside from the stuff we've already mentioned, is the fact that it has, and who, maybe the end at some point it will ruin this for me, but it doesn't have the problem I have with so many of these big RPG games of, you got to go save the world, but go fix this toilet first. Now go get this wool. Now go cut down this lumber. Now this toilet's broken again. Like the way that, and I don't want to spoil it for people, but the way that you are entered into this world and this universe, at least the ways I've been playing it, my approach to doing all of these side quests and missions and exploring the world feels very organic, like the way my character would do them. And I'm not ignoring my beloved son for 100 hours. And I find that so refreshing that they're giving me a world to go and explore in and allowing my character to do that. I absolutely love their approach they took.
Hmm. I was going to ask because I feel like, Christian, you do usually bounce off of those big sprawling, you know, I don't know, the Fallouts or the Skyrims or something. And I was going to ask what was different about this one, because it feels like it's in the same vein, but that answers it, I guess.
Yeah. And the other part, and this might, and Jeff, I'd love to get your take on it. This might disappoint some people, but to me, this game is the right amount of big. I've heard, you know, it's like 40 hours kind of thing, but there's not base building. Like Fallout 4, I got distracted. There was too much to do. It became overwhelming. And yes, this game, there's workbenches and you can mod and tweak and you have a, you know, deep character customization, but I feel like it is more focused than what some of these RPGs have become, in my opinion. So I find it very refreshing to know that I'm not building a habitat onto my ship and I need to do this and that, this other people are now dying, so I got to go do this to defend this horde because it's also a tactical, you know, tower defense game, and it's also a farming game, and it's also an RPG, and also you got this end of the world thing, and also it's a shooter. Like, I feel like Outer Worlds has taken learnings of those games from the past, you know, whatever it is, 20 years, and really solidified what they can do well in a different genre. This feels like the open world or open hub RPG version of Horizon Zero Dawn to me. Like, maybe nothing incredibly new or brand new that they're inventing.
Horizon Zero Dawn is open world.
Yes, but that's more of like an action-y third. I don't know. They seem like different genres to me. But the point I was trying to make is that it does everything that it does so incredibly well that it's, Yeah, I mean, it who knows? There's still a couple of really big releases this year, but Outer Worlds right now is comfortably in my favorites of the year. I love it. But Jeff, I want to hear your take, because I've just been singing its praises, and I can keep going if I need to.
Well, I will echo most of what you're saying. I have not played it as much as you. I am allowed to say that I have Death Stranding, and I have been playing a lot of Death Stranding. I'm not allowed to talk at all about it. The pain of Death Stranding, but but next week I get to talk about it. I'm very, very excited. I will talk about it next week. But it means that I have not put in the hours to this game that I would like. I mean, this is classic. So, you know, that's just where we are right now. It's the end of the year. We're in too many games land. But I will say the hours that I have put into it, totally agree with you, Christian. It's fantastic. So I love the Fallout game. I love Elder Scrolls. I love the Bethesda games. I love Fallout. I put many, 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 many hours into all the Fallout games. Love, love, love them. But if there was one thing I would change about the Fallout games, the setting gets a little...
It's heavy.
You know, it's heavy. It's wasteland. It's all drab and gray and broken and nothing's pretty. And I mean, there's moment in Fallout 4 where you get to Pretty Town, and that's all spoilers for Fallout 4. But yes, you know, when I got to Pretty Town in Fallout 4, I was like, yes, I like this. This is great. But you know, at a certain point, it's just like, I want to be not in the wasteland. I want to see sci-fi done with sci-fi. That's this game. Uh-huh. I mean, this game, you get to see cool stuff. Fallout is a shooter, at least Fallout 4 really sort of embraced its shooterness. I love the VAT system. I love the VAT system, but it really is a shooter, but you're in the wasteland with all these sort of crappy cobbled together guns that don't work great. You have to crank them and wind them. And there are some laser pistols you get, yes, and some cooler things. But for the most part, it's all not the best version of it, because you're in the wasteland, you're post-apocalyptic, you're dealing with cobbled together tech. With Outer Worlds, it's a rad shooter. You get awesome guns, you get really cool abilities. They do an awesome job with making your companions feel interesting and helpful and customizable. It very much borrows from that Mass Effect idea of having two companions with you, and you create this trio of complementary skill sets. And I love that. I love being able to super specialize my guy. One of the things I always struggle with games like this is like, oh man, I love being the stealthy hacker guy, but I also really like being the super charming, charismatic persuasion conversation guy, but I only have so many points to do, so where am I going to put them? This game lets you bolster your weak side of your main character with awesome companions
if you want. So from someone who's done most of one playthrough and a decent part of another, they feel vastly different, which I think is oftentimes these games promise that, but so far I am playing them very differently, and the repercussions are felt. And also that goes with, yes, you can have your companion fill those holes for you, or you can just be a bunch of gunslingers. Like, hack. I have no need to hack. I'm going to kill everyone in here, and then I'm going to blow up this safe, which is also really cool.
The cool thing, too, I've never really seen a game like this that has figured out a way to make the non-combat skills and talent point investment pay off in combat. Mm-hmm. For example, I the character I'm playing on my main playthrough, my only playthrough right now, is very charming, is super charming. I like being able to persuade people, lie to them, convince them things, Jeff, just by talking.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
You know, just like nailed IRL. but because I have such a high charisma stat and have a bunch of perks in that, I also have a chance when I shoot somebody of them just deciding to not want to fight me for a little while. And it procs pretty often, actually. And it really does play out in the context of the shootout. It's like, oh, it's not like, oh, I put all my points in this thing, so I'm just a terrible in combat. No, I'm good in combat, and just in a completely different way than somebody who has awesome shooting skills. And I think that's really clever. And I've never really seen anybody figure that out like that in one of these games. So there are really interesting design decisions across the board. It's a pretty game. It's hard playing it back to back with something like Death Stranding or Call of Duty, Modern Warfare, you know, ray traced on my PC. It's not in that league, but it's certainly a lot prettier than Fallout is. And I mean, it's a very pretty game. I think if I had to come up with any gripes about it, the load times are too long and too frequent, and you have to go in and out of places a lot, just like in all the Bethesda games. And this game doesn't even give you a little status bar when it's loading. I really just want a status bar. Just tell me how close I am to being done with this.
I don't know about every locale, but that gets better, I found, as you progress. But I also, that's one of the reasons I want it on PC. I am playing it on base PS4. And in my first location, I agree, you're kind of go here. Like the mission would have you go back and forth. And I timed it, and I was consistently having load times around 60 to 70 seconds, which is long enough.
You're on base PS4.
On a base PS4 to have me pick up my phone, yeah, and, you know, be distracted. On PC, those same load times were 5 to 10.
Yeah. Well, it's better. I mean, you also have a very nice PC.
I mean, I think we can both say, go to Taco Bell, get this game. You know, like.
Yeah.
For sure. And I'm very much looking forward to just, you know, about a year from now when I'm told, I understand that we will stop having this conversation because load times will just be a thing of the past. We'll just be happy that there are no load times
solved
anymore. Yeah, I hope, man. I'm ready for that future.
Developers will find a way to make them longer again.
They'll just add more.
We always add more. There's no end of any of that. I don't know if you guys know, but I've been so Tim Kane and Leonard Boyarsky joined Obsidian for this game, I understand. And so they haven't been and of course it takes a team, right? So all of Obsidian's great. So I don't want to say they're the linchpin to this, but they moved over to, and I think Leonard was at Blizzard for a while, but they've kind of been not doing much. And so I followed them because they were the original folks behind the original Fallout 1, mm-hmm, which I loved. And I'm not plugging our podcast, but we did have them on when we did that game. So if you want to hear their interview,
I've heard it.
And Leonard's the art guy.
Go listen to that.
I listened to that too. Yeah, it was great. Yeah.
And I followed them through Troika when they did that Arcanum RPG game, because I love these games as well. And so I was really wanted to hear what you guys had to say, because they're kind of back. You know, those two are back together making what they love to make, and it's kind of a modern version of that. So, and then you throw Space Quest in there, which we also did a thing on and had Mark Crow on. And so, like, I'm like drooling right now. I can't wait to play this.
It's
one of the two guys from Andromeda.
I know. Yeah. Like, we talked to him. It was one of the two guys. I was beside myself.
Well, the other thing, since we have a developer here, one of the other things that I want to throw out to the gaming universe is, can we get to a place with these games? I understand why it's done, but it always bugs me that when I get into conversation with an NPC in one of these games, we zoom in on their face and they maintain eye contact with me nonstop. They are staring at me, having a whole conversation.
It's because you're so charming. What are you talking about?
They're just like, that doesn't happen in my game. That's not how human beings communicate with each other. I was so happy seeing Assassin's Creed Odyssey, for example, how they did a discussion. It was much more cinematic. I mean, it was still two people standing in a place talking back and forth. It wasn't exactly, you know, West Wing walk and talks or anything like that, which I think would be a wonderful thing for video games to get to. But it at least felt a little bit more realistic and dynamic, and we had angles, and it wasn't just like zoom in on a face, stare at a person, listen to VO while we decide what responses we want to have, which is very video gamey and fine. It's fine. But I would love for us to just realize that human beings don't stare at each other when they talk. They're, you know, they're not exactly perfectly squared off looking at each other when they're having a conversation. You know, I think it's a next step in making those feel more dynamic and interesting and less like I'm now interfacing with a human, that I'm more having a conversation that's naturalistic. So I'm hoping we get to there. Anyway. That's my only, really my only other gripe with this game. And it is very, very good. Funny, fun. The locations are interesting. I'm incentivized to explore and find cool things. And, you know, you can upgrade your weapons. You don't have to just replace everything all the time. I think the inventory system is done really well.
The action is done well. I think I find the shooting, while I know it's an RPG going on behind it, it feels more, it doesn't handle quite like Borderlands or Call of Duty. We'll talk about here in a second, but to me, it handles a lot like a shooter. And I really, really like their approach to the VAT system, where it's not stopping, but it's slowing it down. But I can see what my target, like, this will blind them. This will, you know, slow them down. So that I have a brute over here, so I'll slow down time, shoot their legs, slow them down, focus on these people close to me. And the weapons later in the game become really fun and creative with some of the powers that you can kind of mix with them. The Outer Worlds to me is an absolute, absolute triumph of a game. And I'm very excited to see what Obsidian does. And the other thing I should notice too, that I haven't experienced any jank, right? Like for these big RPG style games, and Fallout New Vegas had its problems when it launched. This game, I haven't encountered any. The load times are long. And the only other nit I can pick with it is that playing on my TV, I'm swinging a chair close because the fonts are a little too small for me to sit far away on my couch. But I mean, that's it. This is, you know, I'm good at nitpicking.
Well, keep your chair there. I can't talk about Death Stranding, but there's another game that I'm playing where it's like, it commits font murder on your eyes.
Yeah.
But I'm not talking about anything specific.
I'm talking about Call of Duty.
We are going to transition to Call of Duty. I just wanted to say, because you brought up the time slow-mo thing, I dig it. I still prefer VATS. I know you can't just straight up steal VATS, but I wish people would just straight up steal VATS, because I still prefer it.
And that's where I think some hardcore RPG fans will maybe like Outer Worlds a little less than Fallout, because of what I mentioned, like, it doesn't have the base building. As far as I know, there's no romancing in Outer Worlds. So I do think it's a little scaled back. And to me, VATS felt like much more of a hardcore tabletop RPG style thing, where it's like, I see the risk reward. I have the
percentages.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I personally really like that Outer Worlds games that, or, you know, video games out a little more, it feels more shootery. So to me, that feels more compelling, but I totally understand that. I bet a number of gamers feel the way you do.
Yeah. You still are able to do the sort of the same things that you get with VATS, where if you hit them in the head, you can blind them. If you hit them in an arm, they prevent them from using that arm, et cetera, et cetera. You just have to do it yourself. You have to aim at the arm, and you get to slow down time and do it. So yeah, you're right. It's more arcadey that way, but I like VATS. But yes, home run for Outer Worlds from what I've played so far. And I'm very much excited to return to this when I finish some of the things up, because I think it is one of the best games of the year for sure. All right, let's talk about Call of Duty Modern Warfare, which we both played on PC, and we both have those ray tracing cards, Christian. We got all those rays traced. I have the 2080 Ti. You have the what?
2070 Super. And yes, this game is ray tracing. We both received codes for this game. This game has ray traced shadows, so it's not everything ray traced. Not like glass and reflections and stuff like that, but the real time ray traced shadows.
It certainly seems like a showcase for that technology. The light in this game. First of all, the game look. I mean, playing on PC. Playing on a very high-end PC with a very high-end card. So obviously, grain of salt. I don't know how this game looks on console. It is utterly jaw-dropping on my rig. It is almost photorealistic many times. And I'm playing in an ultra-wide. It supports ultra-wide. It supports ultra-wide completely, which some games will let you play in ultra, like Borderlands 3, for example, will let you play in ultra wide, but then every time a cutscene happens, it cuts off the sides because the cutscenes are either pre-rendered or made to just be, you know, on a regular screen. This game, I would love to see how it looks not ultra wide, because the cutscenes are, it looks like it was made for ultra wide. It places the characters on far away from each other, and the camera is perfectly framed for ultra. It is incredible. I've never seen better human models in the cutscenes. They look like real people. It's almost not even Uncanny Valley. It's almost just real. And the light, the way the game handles light and smoke and fire, there's a lot in the early levels, a lot of you're in the dark and someone's shining a flashlight through smoke. It's like, it's utterly incredible how real it feels, how just like I'm watching a movie, I'm playing through a movie and specifically showing me the way light is impactful in a game, or can be impactful in a game like this, where I don't know where the enemies are. They have flashlights. I have a flashlight. There's a scene early on where you walk through a tunnel and someone sparks up a flare, and it's like, it's all reflected red inside this. It's just, yeah, ray tracing. I'm excited for that too. This is amazing. Beautiful. I mean, one of the most beautiful games I have ever played, for sure.
I agree. And I think before I can really start talking about the game, I need to say I don't approve of Activision Blizzard's approaches to freedom and democracy. And for a game that is built around fighting for that, I find the company's actions very distasteful. And I am shocked at the position they still find themselves in here the week of BlizzCon. Yes, the company's made bad decisions and continues to make them, it seems, in that regard. I agree. I find the game beautiful and stunning. My problems with it and that beauty, and I've looked online and I guess it's common. I'm curious if you're getting it, Jeff. The cutscenes are all very hitchy for me, like tons of stuttering. Yeah. And it stinks because they are like the in-game graphics are gorgeous. 60 frame, whatever it is, right? Like, I'm not having a problem with frame rate in game, but then it goes into the cutscenes where the graphics are kicked up a notch, like they are a little better, and
I don't get that. I get where it'll just come to a grinding halt for a second, as if it needs to catch up. It's almost like I'm streaming something on Netflix and it has to pause and reload. Huh. And then it'll go and it won't have a problem again, but it will definitely grind to a halt and I'll be like, uh-oh, am I crashing? And it doesn't crash. It just picks up again. And I don't understand that. It is not ideal, for sure. It is not great. It is very annoying.
Yeah.
But cutscenes themselves are just
jaw-dropping. They are stunning. I get several hitches per cutscene, it feels like. And then this is my single player review. I understand a big part of this game is it's multiplayer. And I talked about how I see the 2v2 mode being very popular and has the potential to do really well for esports when I played the beta of that. I have learned personally as a gamer that multiplayer isn't where I live. It's not what I enjoy. It's not how I want to spend my time. And I am very, very close to the end of the single player campaign, which for me will clock in around 5.5 hours or something like that, which is on par for this type of game. While I find it beautiful, I do not like it, unfortunately. I find that it tries so many emotional shortcuts in its storytelling that I find it almost does nothing well. It's like trite tropes of this is a brother and a sister and a flashback, and now we're going to watch this person die, and now you're here and you're this person, and here's this person, and this person lost their mom. You have a mom. You know what it feels like to lose a mom, don't you? And also here's this person, and this is an explosion, and this is a tough decision. Are we going to kill innocent people? That is tough. I mean, you have to because the game tells you, but tough decision. Okay, now you did that. Now you're blowing everything up. Doesn't that feel cool? Listen to this song. Blow it up, baby. Blow it up. Now you had a dad, didn't you? Guess who dies? Dads die. That's emotional. Isn't that emotional? Now high five this dude. Yeah.
You're just saying like it's not earned. It's correct. It feels it's, like it's not given enough time to actually – you're expected to feel it only because they tell you.
Yes. And yes, 100% that. So narratively, I feel like it's a letdown in that regard. And then as I was playing this game, and there are other games that – likely do this as well, but as I was playing and trying to critically examine this game, I really think it walks the line between me playing and having agency or freedom. Again, this is just single player. Multiplayer is a very different beast. And having agency or freedom, and me literally, like the joke for old Call of Duty was press X to mourn. And I feel like so much of this game and I don't think this is new to the franchise, but I've done it so many times now, I'm less impressed by the literal smoke and mirrors in these games because they've been beautiful for a long time. But I find that I'm not really choosing what to do. I'm just doing what the game tells me to do. Run over there, get this gun, shoot that thing. Now run over here, blow up that thing. Run over here, go in the hallway, breach this door, shoot those guys, run over here. And it's, there aren't multiple ways to do things. Me picking up different guns along the way doesn't seem to really affect how I play things. When I need the sniper, the sniper's there. I'm going to do the sniper. When I need the, you know, drop the missile, I'm dropping the missile. And it was really interesting. And I think if the game gave me more agency or creativity in the play style, that said, the left trigger, right trigger, silky smooth, very responsive. But if it gave me agency over those decisions to like flank or, you know, choose the way I want to engage in this combat, I'd find it more interesting. And the story wouldn't hit me as trite as much as it does. Or if the story really pulled me through, I would say view it more as like an interactive narrative where it's like, yeah, I don't have real agency over my character, but my God, I need to see how this story ends. But I think because it's doing those two things in concert, which again is not necessarily new to the single player franchise, I find that the story isn't engaging. It's just telling me things that, you know, this, and it's not even a great action movie in terms of like, you know, pick your war movie that is engrossing and engaging. And then the gameplay itself, I find very linear. And am I playing? You know, like all I can do is fail. And by succeeding, I'm just kind of playing Simon. I'm kind of bummed on it, and I don't know if it's the game hasn't changed or if it's that I have.
Yeah, I've always viewed this series as a roller coaster ride, and I guess I didn't have the disappointment that you had based on it not being that. You know what I mean? Or you know, wanting it to not be that. Because, you know, here's a series that the last iteration didn't even have a single player mode at all, and I've only really played these games for the single player mode. I'm not that multiplayer guy. So I was excited to revisit the multiplayer. It is so pretty. And that, I mean, I'm shallow. I freely admit I'm shallow, but that alone is just like, man, I want to keep playing this because of how utterly gorgeous it is. And it, you know, it does give me that visceral, cool thing moment to moment. It's always big. There's always some cool thing. There's always something that's going to explode right next to me because, you know, you get the Jeep and you think you're free. Nope, the Jeep explodes. Of course, because this is a Call of Duty game. We're on that crazy over the top roller coaster. And I guess it hasn't disappointed me quite as much as it disappoints you, Christian. But I also, it's not going to be my favorite game of the year. It is just a fun theme park ride. It is. That's what I go to these for. And I'm finding it to be satisfying on that way. The guns are all cool. The moments are cool. The visuals are cool. Good enough for me. But again, most people play this franchise for the multiplayer anyway. And neither you or I is really, given a fair specimen.
I would love a listener to write in, and really kind of provide that review, because it is something that, you know, neither one of us will be able to really critique, or maybe in the future we can get a guest as this game continues to build. Cause it is fascinating to me that, you know, last year there was no single player, and this year this is a big, you know, expensive single player. I don't want to dismiss this as like being poorly made. It is polished. I mean, it is very much what I think you should expect from a Call of Duty single player. I just want it to be more.
Yeah. I mean, unbelievable, like the level of detail in every single thing. It's just, yeah.
So I'm super curious crazy. What multiplayer mode finds legs and becomes the thing for the next, you know, 12 to 18 months, because they've said no loot boxes and it seems like they're committing to doing it the air quote right way. So I'd love, you know, if a listener had a strong opinion about why they think it succeeds or fails. I think it'd be fascinating.
Are there any mechanical, you know, from the gameplay side, mechanical additions or differences from last year, or is it pretty typical?
And multiplayer, it's,
I mean, maybe in the multiplayer,
yeah, very different modes. Guns kind of progressing last year was so much just battle royale and then zombies. Single player,
yeah.
There's, as far as I can tell, no discernible difference between original modern warfare. It's,
run up to the thing that you need to do, push the button to do it, and then while shoot everything that you can.
Yeah.
So that's fun.
Yeah. I mean, fun. It is what it is. Yeah.
It is what it is. And I think, interestingly, too, Christian, between this and Control, which I still haven't played yet, but I think you in particular and both of us are sold on ray tracing, right? I mean, if ray tracing is going to be a cornerstone of the next gen consoles, I think we were a little skeptical about how big of a deal it was going to be when we were looking at Tomb Raider and some of the early ray tracing games. It was like, is it even that big of a deal? But it, I think it's a big deal.
If next gen is ray tracing and no load times, sign me the expletive up. You
know? Right? I mean, I think, yeah, I think between this and Control, yeah, I'm
yes. sold.
All right. Well, we're getting close to the end here, but I do want to carve out a little bit of tabletop time because Tim is here and we don't always have board game players to talk to. So we're going to just do a quick tabletop time right now. Right now. So Tim, you have brought some stuff to the table recently, right?
Yeah. This will definitely be quick. I only got to play each of these once, so Jeff might have to help me explain them for those who haven't played them before. But I just wanted to some quick shout outs. First, I got to play a card game called Gloom. I don't remember if Jeff's talked about it on the cast before, but it's a cool card game. Kind of the art style I wanted to talk about quickly first, because it's got this sort of Edward Gorey kind of feeling. Do you agree, Jeff? It's kind of got that feel to it.
It's great. I mean, it's a perfect game for Halloween, spooky time.
Yeah. And I guess the point of the game is you're trying to kill your family off.
What?
It's not explicit that, but yes. Yeah. I mean, it's not like, hey, kill your family and win. Yeah. Yes. I mean, it's sort of Adam's Family, or like it's tongue in cheek horror with, you know, as you said, like Edward Gorey, or kind of a, you know, the macabre as the punchline kind of thing.
Yeah. And there's, you know, it's the tongue in cheek for sure. I mean, it is very much like if Edward Gorey did a tabletop card game, both in art, but also in kind of tone. But the cards are really cool because they have a lot of the cards are transparent. So like the mutators, you put the card on top of your cards that are down on the table, and it changes the nature of the card. And so you can actually put transparent cards on top of other people's cards too, to kind of change the point values and stuff. So, and then each, I think what you do is you pick your family. So they have kind of like, macabre, themed families of different what, so there's like an Addams Family kind of riff. And then there's, you know, different kind of archetypes of like horror families, if you will, kind of still tongue in cheek and humorous. And so you pick your family and you're kind of pitted against the other. So it's a very cool, unexpected, game for me. And someone suggested it. And then the next one I wanted to mention really quick was, which I know Jeff recommends a lot, over the years. And I know it's kind of heralded as one of the better games kind of in existence, but I finally got to play Splendor. I don't know why it's taken me that long, this long to play it, but that game is amazing. It's just so simple. It's simple. I guess I never really knew what kind of game it was going to be. And I guess I was a little bit intimidated by playing it. That's why it's taken me so long. But it's very simple. And for anyone who's, cause I wouldn't consider myself a huge board gamer, cause I just don't have the group to play with, but I do occasionally get in there. And when I did finally get to play this one, it definitely lived up to the hype when it comes to its simplicity, and just anyone can kind of play it. I did win. So, that probably helped. But that's an amazing little game. And then we played Castle Panic, which was essentially a tower defense board game co-op. orcs charging a tower. So pretty standard fare there, but pretty cool mechanics with the different classes of both heroes and orcs. And I definitely appreciate co-op games quite a bit. So that's why I wanted to mention that one for anyone who's looking to play that. Definitely cooperate. That would be my suggestion to you when you play that game. Work together. But yeah, there's a great, Jeff, have you ever been to Mox Boarding House up in Seattle? I forget.
I haven't. I've heard of it, but I've never been able to make it there. No,
there's two of them up here. So anyone in the Seattle area, if you're not a big board gamer, but you want to be, or you want to kind of just go and meet people, they're amazing kind of restaurants / board game shops where you basically can go and eat, but then you can for free rent any of the games they have. And then if you buy the game when you leave, you get 10% off. So it's been a great way for me to, you know, grab some friends and play, and we kind of just converge there. But yeah. So anyway, that's my mini tabletop time.
That's great. Yeah, no, Splendor is an easy recommend for anybody, especially, you know, the thing I get asked most often for people looking to get into board games is like, do you have anything that's great for two people? My wife or my husband and I want to do just a couples game. And I think Splendor isn't just a two-player game. You can play it with more, but it's great with two. And the pieces are real chunky and thick, and it's an easy game to learn. I think that you build this little economic engine, and there's lots of different ways to attempt to do it. It sets up fast, plays fast as well.
Yeah.
It's a great little game, Splendor. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Very, very cool. All right. Well, that is going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have a parting gift coming up, so stick around for that. But Tim Longo, thank you so much for being here. Man, what a pleasure. And it's always so fun to hear your take on stuff. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Where can people keep up with you and your podcast and all your goings on online?
I'm on Twitter. I'm Tim Longo Jr. with a JR at the end. Our podcast is Dev Game Club, at Dev Game Club, on Twitter and devgameclub.com. It's like we said, it's a, two veteran game developers talking about games and playing old stuff. And so if we play a game that is near and dear to your heart from your past, definitely check out those episodes. And like I said, we try to get somebody, a developer who worked on the game, to come on and talk about their experiences. So we do it on the side. It's just for fun. And just for the love of the craft, I guess, if you will. So yeah, that's where you can find us.
It feels to me a little bit like GDC all year round. It's like, it's really great.
Wow, I love that's it. Flattering. Yeah, great. And I should mention Brett Duville is my co-host. So, he's out there too.
Yeah. Christian Spicer, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
Twitter's the best way to see, if I'm doing any shows in LA. Like last week, I ended up doing a run of shows at the weekend at the Ice House. That was a lot of fun. And Twitter was where Pete, you found out about that. That is at Spicer. I stream this show usually, speaking about game delays, sometimes this show gets delayed and we stream later or record later or earlier. But usually it's Sundays at 7:15 PM Pacific, and you can hang live with us at what?
Sometimes it gets delayed till May, you know,
next episode will be in May. you can hang live with us at twitch.tv/Christian Spicer if you'd like. And then, couple more games, right? I'm still World Series focused at this point, so that's going to be
hanging
the
on,
bulk man. Of my week.
Hanging on.
What about you, Jeff?
Yeah, I thought it was going to be over fast. Not so. With me, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. And I have some other shows for you to check out. If you want to hear me talk about movies and TV shows, check out the Slash Filmcast. That's at slashfilmcast.com. This week we are talking about, Parasite. That'll be an interesting discussion. Mm. So check that out. You can also listen to me weave my own tale, create my own world of fantasy in Dungeons & Dragons on a show called The Dungeon Run. And you can find that on as a podcast, anywhere you get podcasts, by searching for The Dungeon Run, or on YouTube as a video on demand, and you can find that by searching for The Dungeon Run there as well. But we record them live and stream them on a service called Caffeine. Those are Wednesday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific time, and you can find that at caffeine.tv/The Dungeon Run. All right, let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts. Tim, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
I do. I think I'm late to the party on this by quite a bit, but I've discovered recently the band First Aid Kit, a duo, two sisters, Swedish sisters, who are kind of folk rock, folk kind of genre, but they are amazing. So if you haven't heard First Aid Kit, they're just their voices are amazing. Their talent is amazing. And I'm kind of been into folk and folk rock lately. So when I found them just kind of accidentally, they've been around for quite a while, but they have an amazing cover of America, Simon and Garfunkel as well as their original stuff is great. So First Aid Kit, I would recommend.
Awesome. I will be Googling that right after this. Christian Spicer, parting gift.
It's a Spice Man recommendation. It's pumpkin seed season. We carved a big old pumpkin today and roasted them seeds. They are so delicious. I love pumpkin seeds. They're
How'd you do it, man? What's your secret recipe?
It's very simple. We're very straightforward. It's salt, pepper, and garlic powder, and that's really all she wrote.
Those are the spices.
Yeah. Oh, it's infectious. It got you. Got you.
I was just curious about which spices you put on it.
Those be them, really. Sometimes some a little, you might actually do like a little spice, like a little red pepper flake, something like that. But these were kid friendly. So we left that out. And they get stuck in your teeth because you eat the shell. It's not like a sunflower seed where you're popping them and eating just the seed inside. But just roast them. It's easy. Easy breezy, carve a pumpkin, have fun. You know, this is the week Halloween. Next week after Halloween, make some pumpkin bread. I'm sure I'll talk about that. Pumpkin pancakes, delicious. And when you're doing that, getting all that ready, the easiest thing you can make from a pumpkin are pumpkin seeds. It's silly. It is trite. It's a tradition for a reason. I encourage you to take the time to do it.
They're great. I love them.
Too. I didn't do them this year. I don't know. I don't want to do them. I didn't have any. We got a listener suggested parting gift. This comes to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. This comes from listener Jason, who says, "Hi guys, love your show. Been an avid Monday morning listener for nearly the past year. Kudos to my brother Mike for turning me on to this." Thank you, Mike. Appreciate that. Word of mouth, our best friend. Jason continues, "My wife and I very much appreciated a previous parting gift from Jeff to watch Working Moms. As parents of young kids, this was hilarious and true to reality for the most part. Plus, I love your promoting Canadian content. I thought I'd return the favor and provide my own recommendation, Year and Years. This is a Studio Canal HBO joint venture that is basically Black Mirror, but with the technology elements for the most part in the background. Instead, over six episodes, I like snack-sized shows, we follow a family over 15 years from 2019 onwards. There's a focus on political elements, but what I think you'll enjoy are the nods to the evolution of technology happening around the Lyons family, from the use of Signor and Alexa placeholder to wearable integrated peripherals to VR headsets worn at nearly all times by the kids, tablets of the future. The story is heartwarming and feels true to life, even if a bit trite at times. I hope you'll give it a try. I'm sure you'll enjoy." Very cool, Jason. I have not watched Year and Years, but I will give it a shot. Jason doesn't say where you can find it, but I will have to Google that. Year and Years is the show, a Canadian show. My parting gift is also going to be food, like Christian's was. I went to a really cool meal. It was quite expensive, but it was something my wife and I had been planning to do for quite a long time. We had to change the date, but this is a company called Outstanding in the Field, and it is like a pop-up one night only meal, usually in the field of a farm, and they have big celebrity guest chefs that come and cook the meal. And It is the kind of the gimmick of it is that it's one big, huge, long table. Sometimes it's on the beach. Sometimes it's in an orchard. Sometimes it's who knows where. It's all over them. They pop them up. They do them all across the country, up into Canada, even internationally. They're doing ones in Australia and Sweden. Same company, outstanding in the field. And we went to one in Temecula, California here. And it was awesome. You bring your own plates. That's kind of another gimmicky thing where you bring your plate. And so everybody brings their plates and you come and you sit down and invariably you're sitting next to people you've never met. And you're having this amazing food that was locally sourced by all the farmers in the area. And you kind of learn about the food and it's delicious and everybody's sharing. It's all family style. So you're interacting with the people around you. It was really cool and a lovely evening outside, sitting outside. We were sitting in an olive orchard underneath the olive trees. We had amazing olive oil that was made that day. It was cool. Mm. And it's very expensive, but we had a great time. And for we actually gave one of these to my mom for a gift as well. She had a great time. And so for a kind of a splurgy kind of anniversary gift, which is what ours was, I would highly recommend it. Outstanding in the Field is the name of the company. And again, there's lots of them all over the country. There's like the 96th one they'd done in 2019. So lots of them. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Tim Longo and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star. Thanks to all the folks in our chat room for hanging out with us in real time. I see you guys. Red Sky 03, Shareable Texas, lots of others. Thanks for being here. Thanks to all of you who download our show. Thanks to Mike for recommending Jason. And I hope you can be like Mike and recommend our show to a friend or family member as well. We appreciate that. We'll see you next week where I get to talk about Death Stranding. So I'm very excited. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.